morning, everyone. It's Sunday, 11 o'clock. We had a long night last night, so I won't blame anyone for not capable of paying full attention. I went to the whiskey tasting myself as well, which was very nice. My name is Eric. I'm working for a company, Lemon Shark, as a security consultant. And I have had multiple roles, and one of my most favorite is still security monitoring. Today we're going to talk about ransomware. And although it's a topic is very much used in the security world, I think there's still much to tell about it. I would like to mention there is a little bit of a disclosure thing going on in this talk, and I will notice when that moment is coming. I'm fully acknowledge when someone is taking picture, that's actually not a problem. But if I'm moving to the part which is called offline files, I would appreciate no camera recording or taking pictures. That is all. All right, so today we're going to talk about ransomware, and to, well, fully explain what ransomware is about, I'm going to show you a little bit about the ransomware history. I'm going to show you some samples. Obviously, there will be a demonstration for one or two things, and I would like to show how you can prepare for an attack as a security analyst, for instance. Now, if you look at ransomware in the news, there were some events that really stand out. For instance, in Vegas last year, there was a big ransomware attack, and at a coincidence, there was also DEF CON, because you have a lot of hackers there, and maybe they disabled a couple of elevators or ATM machines. Well, basically, that is nothing if you compare to the damage that had been done by the Black Hat ransomware group was able to infect their VMware ESXi service, which holds all of the VMs with doing the transactions and things. And because of that, the hotels like the MGM, the Bellagio, they had a lot of problems. It went offline and need a lot of time to recover from that. If you look, for instance, what happened in Holland with the Dutch National Soccer League, they had a ransom attack as well. They were attacked by BlockBit, and it started with a phishing mail, and after that it spread around the network. Everything was encrypted. They didn't have any access to the system, and eventually they recovered from the situation. They will probably not admit, but I think everyone knows they just paid a ransom in order to be able to continue their activities. The MediaMart was also hit by an attack by the Hive. The Hive is also a very dangerous ransomware group, also attacking hospitals. And the MediaMart was a victim. They had a lot of damage because a lot of the cash registers and ATMs and the return administration, all those things didn't work anymore. So there was a lot of, I would say, customers not happy and a lot of damage being done. Then we had some larger attacks on a global scale, like attacking by Microsoft, by the Lapsus Toller group. There was even some source code stolen there, and they used also bypassing techniques in order to circumvent multi-factor authentication and use those credentials to attack other systems. Talking about attacking other systems with obtained credentials, that is something our evil did. They attacked one of the IT suppliers with having multiple customers, and in that way we were able to infect also those connected customers. That's a supply chain attack. It's not only about money, it's also about things are very important in order to deliver services. For instance, it could be energy, fuel. The Colonial Pipeline is an example. Planes needed to be kept on the ground because the fuel supply was attacked by ransomware. And I mentioned before, hospitals were also attacked, and hospitals, they don't have time in order to have proper recovery strategy from a ransomware attack because they're dealing with human lives. So in that way you can say they are a very easy victim, and therefore some ransomware groups will also stay away from hospitals to attack those because they don't want to have the responsibility of human casualties. Maastricht University, another example, a lot of damage, and the amount of ransom was being paid in order to presume their activities, and they were attacked by Klopp, and there wasn't even an administration password disclosed in there, which was such an easy password, the attacker was able to compromise and using that password in order to stay in the network for a very long time and disable all of the backups. Now, looks like maybe a little bit of a negative scenario here. There's also some good news to tell. So if you look at the picture on the left, on top, this is a picture of a, well, you could say a raid going on. It was organized by Interpol, and a couple of countries worked together in order to make a big bust somewhere in Ukraine and make arrest of a couple of, I would say, key figures in the ransomware group world. I think even the Hive was also included. The other way, having good news, the other thing is that you will notice the amount of attacks will always increase. But if you look in the timeline, the amounts of payments are decreasing. So the ransom that is being demanded after an attack, I think companies maybe are now better prepared for those things, refuse to pay, and work on their recovery strategies. That could maybe a good development in order to decrease those attacks in the end. All right, so ransomware, I probably am aware that everyone knows that what it is, but to get the facts entirely straight, I would like to just give a simple explanation what it actually entails. So ransomware, I would consider it a digital hostage situation of files on disk. And the hostage occurs by using encryption. And the encryption is only made undone with a decryption key after you have paid the anonymous Bitcoin kind of money in order to, that is called the ransom. And that is basically the formula which being used always in the basics. Now, the encryption is doing actually the hostage. And what the attacker will do, because when you need to encrypt a lot of files on disk, you need the speed, so they use a symmetric algorithm to encrypt all of the files on disk. And that encryption will deliver a shared secret, so one key only. After that, the shared secret will be encrypted with an asymmetric algorithm, which is way less faster, and you need a public and a private key, the private key to decrypt. So in that way, the attacker will benefit from both the properties of symmetric encryption and asymmetric encryption. All right, so when you have a look at the ransomware evolution, you can ask yourself, what has changed in all of these years? When you start with the first ransomware attack in the past, that was, I think it was the AIDS Trojan, and it was distributed by floppy drives. And after you install the software or the malware, the Trojan will execute a message on screen. You will need to make a payment, and that can be done just by putting dollars in the envelope and send it to a particular address. So the distribution is done by, well, the postal mail thing. Now, it is not so strange that it's that basic still stays the same, although the technology behind it changed, obviously. So now the distribution is done by, well, digital email, phishing, spear phishing, and such. And the delivery, that could be a malware dropper, for instance, or a macrovirus holding a malware or malicious command. So the first ransomware attack was with symmetric encryption. The encryption got cracked, and new species and varieties and types occurred using more advanced type of encryption. Also, asymmetric encryption started to appear, like you for instance see here, which is by the GP code. And it's not only about using encryption in the way of the attack. It could also be, I would say, a fake attack or a screen locker, which only presents a message on screen. You need to pay, something bad happened, and you need to pay to make it undone. So while all these different species of attacks appeared, there was a global breakout, for instance, with WannaCry, and they had this advanced technique when they are always also able to infect other systems over the network by SMB exploits, for instance. And unfortunately, they did make the mistake to disclose the kill switch in the source code, which could make the entire attack stop from happening. Like you could have seen in the workshop yesterday with malware reverse engineering. If you look at more advanced techniques, what they will use, not only encryption of the system, but they will also look for sensitive information, and they will try to exfiltrate that as an extra, well, way of effort to make you pay. There are the more advanced techniques. Also, they will try to, for instance, delete all of your backups to make sure you can't return to a previously good known configuration. All right. What do we have when you have the advanced techniques combined and you need someone to create it for you? You need to have the code. You need to make sure that the negotiation with the victims, for instance, is in order. You need to make sure that you have an update for your malware in place, for instance, and that the combination of all those components is basically a money-generating machine, which is ransomware as a service. And what makes a ransomware as a service successfully is that they have all these components in place. They know they have the connections also with the people, and they just act as just a legal enterprise would do. They will even offer a help desk when you can file your complaint, and they will reply to you in order to find a good solution. And that is also their business model. Another thing to mention is that a lot of ransomware groups, they sometimes join forces, they cooperate together in order to make even more profit together, but also sometimes there is competition between these groups. So for instance, you can see here, you had Lockbit version something, then you had Lockbit version 2, then there was source code being leaked from Lockbit. Another ransomware group took it, and basically they created their own ransomware group again with entirely different people and properties. Now, Marine Pichon mapped out all of those ransomware groups and what their activities are and if they are joining each other or competing each other. And I think this is very good to follow this, what's happening in the ransomware world. You can see which groups are now more dangerous than others. To have a look and to see what the impact actually is. For instance, you can visit the website of Lockbit, and what they immediately offer you is, I would say, an overview of all of the companies they have attacked. And it's also possible to download all of the files from those companies. And usually that is done, could be done by torrent or by another way, downloading the zip file, which contains all of the sensitive information. So this is how Lockbit looks like, and this is how Klopp looks like, and Klopp even make a statement here, they will stay away from hospitals, but then again, this is not an organization for charity, so they will probably, if an hospital relies on IT services, which is maybe not in the scope, why should they stay away from attacking it? So still is something to take an eye out. This is Akira, and well, the funny thing about Akira is this is not the Akira that exists also 10 years ago. This is the new version of Akira, and Akira uses, I would say, a vintage layout which looks very attractive also in order to present it like this. And all these items they mention here, these are also clickable, and definitely you can have an overview of all the victims they have attacked, and they are very fast growing. Okay, so now is the time. I'm going to switch over to an other laptop to resume with the demonstration. And now is also the time I don't want to have any pictures made, if that's okay. And we stop the recording as well. So I'm going to take this button. It's done? Okay, you're going to switch over then. And for the people here, I just wanted to show you an example how it looks like when you download the files from an actual victim and to see what the impact really is. So let's say I have this folder here, and basically I just want to see the impact on sensitive information. So at first I'm going to try to see if there's any financial information in there. So I look for loonstroken, that means payment checks, and you will see all the payment checks of all the employees. These are some PDF files existing here and for everyone to see. Other information I was looking for is verzuim. This is about sick leave. So here are all the PDF files of all the medical records of all the employees. So this is, I would consider this very sensitive information. And when I look for instance, there is a lot of information in there, oops, which is sensitive. Oh, ah. How can I get my? Where did my VM go? This is something you would not like to have in a live situation, but okay. Well, I think you can fill in the rest. I was just wanted to look for instance, for license registration plates. So there were all kinds of PDF files, basically showing all of the license and registration for that company they had. And I was looking for a physical fault. There was also a fault number displayed for a physical fault, which is in that country. Okay? So then you can imagine the impact of the sensitive information that is involved with a ransomware attack. Now, I'm going back to the slide again. I would like to show you, if the screen is back again, yeah, how it actually looks like when the ransomware malware is a system is infected and the malware detonates. So just to see what happens when the ransomware is starting. So this is about the Riot ransomware, and I think it's hard to see because the font size is very small, but I can tell you what's happening here in a very short amount of time. A lot of files are being generated with a different file extension. At the same time, there is a process started, icls.exe, and that process will change all of the permissions of the files to give the malware full control over the whole system. And in the end, a process will just start a process and will deliver the ransomware message that mentioned, well, all your files are encrypted and this is the way in order to arrange the payment. So that is, in summary, what happens during a ransomware infection. It encrypts files and it leaves the rest of the operating system intact. That is correct. It will not encrypt everything because the operating system needs to run in order to produce the screen message. Now, this was a typical example of an attack type 1. And attack type 1 is a single target being attacked, encrypted, and could be, well, the decryption key could be arranged by providing the ransom. Now, what the attacker also could have done is, before starting your encryption, looking around and sniff on the network to see if there is any other system that is maybe more valuable and could deliver something more when you encrypt that. And that lateral movement is being done by, for instance, by SMB shares or obtaining credentials from other user accounts. And I will show you later how that works. Also, what the attacker could have been done is looking for sensitive information and trying to exfiltrate it. And during the way, make sure that the backup situation is made undone to prevent to return to a good known situation, and that we call attack a type 2. So the delivery that is usually done by sending a phishing email. And after the phishing email arrives on the system of the victim, well, the victim will click on the email, and then in the background, the payload is being executed. And in this way, the attacker will get foothold on that system. So the malware will try to make a callback to the attacker. Now, you can try to write an email, phishing email yourself, but if you ask GPT to do it for you, you can ask ChatGPT to write a phishing mail for you, then you'll probably answer with, no, I can do it because that is malicious activity and I will stay away from it. But there is another way to get it arranged, and that is being done by asking ChatGPT the right questions and not asking for a phishing mail, but asking for something a victim wants to have, like a victim is having, like for instance a Microsoft subscription. And you can make it very formal, and you can put a link in there which you want to have the victim clicked on it, and in this way well, ChatGPT will deliver that information and you can use it in your to attack your victim. Now when we have a particular victim, what we're going to do is to try to infect the victim and entice that victim to click on our link. So I'm going to move to my other demo system right here. And when the victim accepts the, well, the email and clicks on the URL, the victim will just think, hey, this looks like Microsoft, so asking for my credentials, it looks perfectly legitimate, so I'm going to log on. Now it will ask for a password. What happens now? The attacker redirects the victim to another website where probably the credentials or anything, something malicious is happening. In this way, it's just an example I took, but it could be any malicious website, obviously. And in the background, it's quite hard to see, but all the credentials is typed in by the victim here, these are obtained. So the attacker now has the credentials of the victim and can use it in a further attack. When the attacker has foothold, also needs to be done. When the attacker wants to have some malicious code running, probably the antivirus software will interfere in most cases. Now, something I have seen in DEFCON last year was that it's possible to have a signature of a malicious file, and this example is Mimikatz. And basically, you can use that that signature that has value and inject it into the trusted signature database of Defender. So Defender then thinks this file is legitimate and is allowed to run. So in this example, I'm trying to inject that signature for Mimikatz. I'm doing that with Defender Pretender, which is an exploit which probably no longer works because Microsoft has updated after this incident occurred. Now you will notice when I try to start Mimikatz, everything is perfectly fine, it's running and antivirus is not complaining. So this is one way in order to circumvent that antivirus protection. What the attacker also will do in most cases is sending a Word document or Excel file with a macro, and the macro contains malicious code and will start the malicious code in order to arrange the callback. Now, in some cases, a couple of years ago, there was an exploit. You didn't even need to have a macro, but this is the Folina exploit. This was about a vulnerability in Office in the diagnostic tools. So if you had a Word document containing a script making use of that vulnerability, it was also a way to make a callback in that case. So the victim obviously needs to enable the content here. And then in the background, a callback is being made. As simple as that. So this was a zero-day attack, and that is immediately was fixed after that. All right, so when the attacker has established foothold, it's now time to do some lateral movement and to see if there are other systems which are of more value for the attacker. That could be a domain controller in this case. And to get there, you might also want to look for other credentials with higher privileges. Now, a way to do it is to look for credentials, is to sniff around the network, for instance. This is done with Responder. Responder listens on the network for logon events, and when a victim, for instance, connects to a share, that event is being captured as a hash value, and that hash value that can be or used immediately or cracked offline. So this is one way to obtain credentials. The other way to find a more valuable target is to land SharpHound on the victim. You don't need to have any high privilege to run SharpHound, and SharpHound makes a connection back to your Bloodhound server and will show you the shortest path to the domain controller. So here you see in a nice graphical view what the shortest path to the domain controller is and what accounts you need to compromise along the way. Now, if we have our, most valuable target now in sight, we might want to upgrade our privileges in order to log on to the domain controller, and that can be done by a Kerberos roasting or a golden ticket attack. And obviously, then you need also the hash value of the account generating the tickets. So, take some time to generate. But in this case, the golden ticket is generated. And that golden ticket is then being used to make a remote connection to the domain controller, which is happening here. And in the end, the ransomware will be activated, and now all of the files of the domain controller are encrypted and with the Grand Crab ransomware. All right. Now, you might all know that every crime leaves traces. And also, these types of activities, malicious behavior, will definitely leave some traces behind in the log files, and that is something we can examine. To be able to do that in a structured way, we call it threat hunting, by combining all that information which could be useful in order to find malicious behavior. And for that, we need a SIEM-SOC system, that is Security Information Event Management, or Security Operations Center. And basically, what we would like to do is have all of the activities being logged by all these perimeter devices in the network. We aggregate all of that information into a single system and generate a single pane of glass to do investigation on all that log information. We correlate all those events together, and in that way we are able to extract some useful information from that. So that is basically how a classical SIEM information management will work. And it's a hell of a job to do that kind of configuration. And in the end, it will probably look like this. Now, if we have generated all of our information together on one place, we're going to look for it and to see if there is any type of malicious behavior we are able to discover. And that is called threat hunting. And obviously, ChatGPT can be asked in order to look for malicious activity, but also the other way around, we can ask ChatGPT, can you help us by identifying malicious behavior? And I asked for, in this case, for riot behavior, can you help me a little bit, what should I look for? And ChatGPT came up with some suggestions. And if you compare like the things I've collected online, it wasn't that bad. It came back with some pretty useful information. And these are basically the things we need to look out for in an investigation if we would like to detect some RIAC ransomware behavior. All right, so we have seen an exploit with Defender Pretender, and now is it possible to see what's happening when you aggregate of that log information and aggregate in the SIEM? Is it capable of extracting that information to see what Defender Pretender is doing and what are the indicators of compromise? Now for that, I'm going to search through the logs and looking for, well, particular command lines which are being used in the process. In this case, it's mp6stub that is being used to inject a kind of signature. And usually when you see that, that could be something that is worthwhile investigation, and it could mean that someone is trying to execute a Felina attack. The other type of behavior could be that someone is trying to delete all of the shadow copies, and that is usually being done with vssadmin.exe with a combination of delete, and that is also something that can be discovered and in your SIEM system. Now, when you look at the Felina attack and what Felina is doing, they are exploiting a certain vulnerability in the Microsoft diagnostic tools, and in order to carry out that exploitation, they will need to execute scripting, but obviously that script is being obfuscated. So therefore, the attacker tries to hide everything malicious that is being executed. Now, if you take that PowerShell script and you decode it, for instance, you will notice there is an invoke web request there. Netcat is being used, and that definitely tells this is a callback that's being made. On the other hand, you will notice that the diagnostic tool is being executed here, and with the task to create a callback. So everything here is connected. When you put all the pieces together, you will see this is malicious behavior, and it looks like a Felina attack. Now, all of the things we have seen here, the types of malicious behavior and the way in order to detect that could be part of a red team exercise where the red team is playing the adversary and try to organize the attack, find a way in. And the blue team is trying to detect the attack and to mitigate. And it's a good way to learn and to prepare for a future real cyber attack. Also, you can combine those teams together, then it would be purple teaming, and there are even more colors you can put in the mix in order to organize a cyber drill attack. So, in terms of detection, it makes sense when an attack is happening, there are a lot of file writes being done. So in that way, that behavior can be detected also in the process by looking for creation of files, deletion of files. The attacker will try to stay undetected, try to hide between parent processes, for instance, will try to make use from of obfuscation. Obviously, try to clear the tracks by clearing the event log, and basically using all kinds of files which will execute other types of code, like bat files here, and all these things, like the registry being used in the process, icless.exe, well, these are the things to have a lookout for, and that could lead to an indication of malicious behavior. All right. Now you think we are now on top of the attack. We think we have control, we have a good system, we can look out for malicious behavior and interfere when something bad is happening. We are able to pull the plug out maybe. We have all kinds of detection in place, making use of EDR. And there are even more advanced techniques in order to have a good security in place. But then again, when a user clicks on an email, yeah, then the system is infected. So it's not only relying on technology, it's also about, yeah, I would say awareness and putting that in the mix in to cyber defense. A very popular way to defend against attacks and is relying on multi-factor authentication, because the authentication process is then being enriched with another way of a factor that's been needed in order to complete your authentication. And in some situations, that is what is very strong and being used very often. But the thing is, it's also how you implement it and how you use it. It's already proven that multi-factor authentication can be circumvented by bypassing techniques of SIM swapping techniques, for instance. On the other hand, it's also how you technically implement those solutions. For instance, where you have an on-premise environment and you're making use of multi-factor authentication, which is in the cloud, and you make a connection from your on-premise environment to the cloud to integrate it, that could also maybe not a very good idea in terms of protection. So then my message would be, just don't rely on one very strong technique, but also put other things in the mix, like for instance a human firewall, which means that the users have also awareness and know the things, what to do, what not to do, and in that way you're going to provide the actual defense in depth, and all those things together makes a very good defending technique against ransomware, I would say, when you combine all these different strategies. So basically, and this is it, I would like to end my presentation with this last remark, and thank you very much for having me, and I'm very happy to answer questions. So thank you very much. Yep. It's also a fight against what we already know and the things we don't know. And it's very hard to prepare and to build a strategy around that. But if you put, I would say, as many backstops in your defense, for instance, one will fail. For instance, authentication will fail. Maybe you have a backup you can rely on. When the backup fails, There should be another way of security measure you have in place or mitigation to make up for the other one that failed. It's never enough.
Yeah.
The attacks are always changing. You think you're in control having the things you already know, but if there's a zero day or an unknown, the new type of malware which we're able to not detect, then the only way to find out that an attack is actually happening could be done maybe by threat hunting. Threat hunting is also sometimes based on the things you don't know yet, but you're searching for patterns, things, behavior, approaches, anomalies, so to speak. That is also a way to find out that maybe something is going on there. Yeah, well, ransomware definitely occurs in the cloud, but also the cloud is prepared for the things.
Yeah.
So they keep previous versions for all of the files that are being backupped, and if they are attacked by ransomware, you can go to a situation which was good before. But definitely, it is also a threat for cloud applications, still is. Does that answer your question, by the way? Oh, it was just a remark. Okay, that's fine. All right, anyone else? That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a nice day, everyone. All right.